We're back for another installment of your Lakers Nation podcast. Jabari Davis here with you again, and I'll be joined by a few guests this week. As usual, I'll be jumping into a discussion about the team with Jameson Welsh and Jordan Buscarini, but this week we'll also be joined by bballbreakdown.com's James Hollis as we get his insight and analysis from the outside looking in. Since James covers the entire league, we'll also get his thoughts on some of the rebuilds or teams that are in transition, like our Lakers, of course. And even though we've discussed it amongst ourselves over the past couple weeks, we'll also get a rookie report card of sorts. We'll also be joined a bit later by LakersNation.com's very own Serena Winters for the first time here on the show, and I'm very excited about that. I'm sure you're aware, you know, Serena is the site's lead reporter and definitely has a behind-the-scenes account of what is taking place with this roster. So we, you know, definitely get in some good stuff during that discussion. But let's go ahead and jump into the mix, you know, here today, you know, guys. And, you know, look, we're not going to try to paint lipstick on a pig. You know, we're not going to sugarcoat things. The team is 3-21. But given the, given the fact that, I guess on second look, some of this should have probably been expected. I actually wanted to come to you guys for, you know, sort of report cards on, you know, the how things are going. We'll break down from the rookies to the veterans, and then we'll do the coaching staff. So, it'll just be an open discussion. Jameson, you know, lead us off. What would you give the rookies, you know, that core group that we're obviously everybody's looking forward to, you know, seeing develop and, you know, seeing what they can actually, you know, become, you know, moving forward. What grade would you give them as a group?
I would give them a B thus far. I think for the most part, Julius Randle has been nothing short of outstanding for the role he's been asked to do and from what we were expecting. D'Angelo Russell had a little slow start first couple of weeks, had a lot of people panicking, and then about 3 weeks or so, he's kind of really picked it up. Last 2 weeks, he's really been impressive. You've seen a couple of 20-point games and whatnot. So, Larry Nance Jr., who's been a pleasant surprise. A lot of people thought that he was picked too high at 27. Watching him play for 4 years, I knew that was a solid pick. I didn't know he'd be this good this early. I would give it a B, maybe even a B plus thus far. There's a lot of room to grow. Anthony Brown's a guy, I think, that can contribute and will contribute later on this season. But right now, I give it a B thus far. I give the rookies a B. They have some room to grow. They will get better. But from what I've seen, if they keep on getting more playing time, I think that grade will get better as the season goes on.
Jordan, you agree? I tend to agree with him. I think, you know, I had high expectations, but, you know, not. I'm actually still – I've been pleasantly surprised even with those high expectations. I didn't necessarily expect, you know, high, you know, productivity. It was more of a matter of I saw that there was some talent out there. So it sounds like both of us have been, you know, pleased with the rookie so far. How have you seen it?
Yeah, I think a B is a fair grade. When you start talking B minus, B plus, you're splitting hairs. I think B is probably a fair grade for this team for the rookies at this point. Julius Randle has been fantastic. And you look at what he continues to do. He's basically averaging a double-double at this point. I believe he's going 12-9 is what his averages are at the time of this recording. You know, we're talking about 9 rebounds per game. That's fantastic for Julius Randle. He's been in shape. And there's been a couple of games, you know, I can go back to the Washington game. That was an unbelievable showing for Julius Randle for a rookie with this team. And I don't believe – the one thing you have to be aware of when you're looking at stats for rookies is inflated stats on poor teams. And when you're sitting at 3-21, let's be honest, that's a poor team. Are these stats inflated? I don't think so. I think what you're seeing is a pretty good group of guys. D'Angelo Russell has been great. D'Angelo Russell has been, as Jameson said, he had us worried the first couple of weeks, but he's been fantastic as of late. His court vision is right there. His outside shot has even dropped over the last couple of games as well. You know, D'Angelo is averaging 12 points a game, and he's dishing out 4 assists, pulling down 4 boards a game. One rookie that Jameson didn't really talk about, Marcelo Huertas, we're not seeing a whole lot of him. He's averaging about 15 minutes of contest right now, but even when he's out there on the court, you're seeing a lot of positives from this guy. I enjoy watching him. I think defensively he has a few deficiencies, and that's to be expected, being a 32-year-old rookie coming from overseas. I think, as time continues to move forward, he'll find a spot here in the league. So, yeah, you know, a B is a fair grade for this team. Hopefully we get to see more Anthony Brown. Larry Nance Jr. has shown his athleticism, but I would love to see more from Anthony Brown. And as Byron Scott continues to mess with the minutes per game, who knows? Anthony Brown may come out and play 40 minutes one game. Who knows? So, hopefully, in the near future, we get to see some more from him. But, yeah, I think a B is a fair grade.
I think that's fair. And, of course, you know, later on we'll get James' assessment as well because, you know, even though the Lakers are not his team, and that's, you know, that's not a stretch by any, you know, or that's not a, you know, that's not saying much. And, you know, I'm sure he'll have, you know, plenty of fire for us. You know, they are a team that he keeps an eye on. All right, let's go ahead and jump to the veterans. You know, obviously, you know, Kobe Bryant is Kobe Bryant. We've seen, you know, we've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly already this season. Of late, you know, he's been shooting less. He's been passing more. He's been looking to get other guys involved and actually taking a step, you know, taking a step aside, you know, down the stretch of games, which I actually think is a great idea. You know, the whole, like, you know, win it for us at the end of the game. You know, while if the circumstances present themselves for that to be a possibility, that's great. I don't think this is a team. And, you know, again, this is certainly not a team that we should be worried about that. You know, moving forward anyhow. But, you know, what about the other guys? You know, because we had some high hopes, you know, coming into the season. You know, we looked at a Roy Hibbert coming in, you know, like the last year of his contract with everything in the world to prove that he can still be at least an effective, you know, defensive player at this level. You had Lou Williams coming off of the sixth man of the year. You had Brandon Bass. You kind of knew what you were going to get there. What are your guys' thoughts on how some of the veterans have been playing?
For the veterans, honestly, you know what? When you're 3-20, you know, when you're 3-21, there's really not a whole lot of room. You can't say someone is, you know, you can't say, hey, this is the A group or B group. At best, the C group. At best, I would go a D. To be honest with you, I would say mm-hmm. It's a D. The only reason I say it is because the guys that were brought in the offseason, you know, your Brandon Bass, Roy Hibbert, Lou Williams. They've all been inconsistent, like wildly inconsistent. Like no one's really been steady. All the guys they brought in to be somewhat stable or somewhat to be solid guys to be on the roster, they've all been inconsistent. And also, I'll put it this way, they haven't been really put in the best situations to be, you know, to do well. But at the same time, I really think that for some of the expectations and some of the things that are going on, I would really say that these guys, a C-minus at best, I'm going to go with D with the veteran guys, these guys that really haven't done as much as you think they could or think they've shown with other teams. Now, there might be other reasons for that, but right now I got to go with a D right now.
I can't say that I argue with that. Jordan, what are your thoughts on the Vets?
I'm going to go with a C, and I'll tell you why. When you take a look at what Roy Hibbert has done this season, yeah, I think we were all hoping that maybe he could recapture some of that skill set that we've seen from him when Indiana made a deep run into the Eastern Conference Finals and nearly knocked off the Miami Heat. But look, let's be honest, and let's look at what Roy Hibbert has done over the course of his career. As far as his averages go, he's floating around career averages. I mean, we're talking 7 points a game. I believe he's averaged 10 for his career. His rebounds, he's averaged like 6-7 rebounds a game. That's where he's sitting right now. He's averaged about 2 blocks his entire career. That's where he's sitting at right now. So as far as Roy Hibbert goes, he's floating around career averages. I think Brandon Bass is also in the same situation. He's floating around career averages. Meta World Peace has been a pleasant surprise for a lot of people, and we've talked about Meta a time or two on this show. I haven't been that surprised by Meta. I thought that Meta could contribute in some form at some point in time of the season, and I think Meta has performed above average considering most standard or most expectations that people had for him. Nick Young is I'm not a Nick Young guy. I've never been a Nick Young guy. I don't like that brand of basketball. I don't like that style of basketball. But even at times this year, Nick Young has stepped up and he's knocked down a couple of shots. They've been average. They haven't been spectacular. Lou Williams has honestly probably been the most consistent performer offensively on this team, and that's another vet that we'd have to talk about. So they haven't been outstanding, but they haven't really – they've just been there. I mean, all the focus – at least from a media standpoint, of course, is on these new guys moving forward. Now I have to talk about Kobe. Kobe's accepting a different role. I think at the beginning of the season, we didn't know if Kobe was going to come back next year or not. Now that Kobe has accepted the fact that this is the end of his career, you've seen a different kind of Kobe. And it's almost as if we had seen this Kobe at the beginning of the season, where would this team be right now? They'd probably still be 3-21, yet we would be talking about Kobe Bryant in a different light. We'd be talking about Kobe, you know, for a long time here on the podcast. We were talking about the inefficiencies of Kobe offensively. If Kobe would have accepted this role, I think, at the beginning of the season, we'd be looking at it just a tad bit different. So as far as the veterans go, numbers are numbers. And there's a reason why career averages and analytics are so important in today's game because, honestly, analytics take out the idea of a player finding a rhythm or a player finding a groove. It's saying, look, it's a sample size for what you're going to get for that player over a course of an 82-game season. So with that being said, a lot of these veterans have performed up to their career averages.
That's fair. Okay. All right, we've got to tackle it. We're at the quarter mark. What about the coaching staff? You know, a lot has been made about the decisions that have been, you know, that are, you know, coming down from, you know, Coach Scott. A lot has been made about the rotations, the decisions to, you know, like just sit guys at certain times and bring guys, you know, certain lineups in, peculiar rotations in. You know, everybody is, you know, all up in arms saying, you know, he deserves to go. And while, you know, look, we've made it no secret that, you know, neither one of us, you know, really have agreed with very much of what he's done this year. I will say this, and you know, I just reiterate what we kind of touched that last week. It really wouldn't make all that much sense to go ahead and, you know, make a move at that position right now, midway through the season. I do not think it would be beneficial in any way to those, you know, to those rookies or to that young core. You know, and again, unless you have just like your coach of the future, I don't necessarily, you know, see a point in making a rash decision right now when you can just make that decision in the off season and kind of start from scratch. What are you guys' thoughts on the coaching staff and the job they've done?
It's been an F thus far. It's been an F. If there could be an F minus, I would go to F minus. It's been that bad. The objective when you have young players and you're rebuilding, the key is get them to play as many minutes as possible, get them to learn on the job. And when you start playing with people's minutes, you start being inconsistent with people's minutes, start tweaking lineups, when you start seeing rookies playing well, playing better, and it just doesn't make sense. There's been too many things the coaching staff has said and done over the first 2 months, over the last 2 months that just haven't made sense, and it still don't make sense. So my whole thing is this. I just cannot trust this coaching staff. I don't think the young players do. I mean, we saw earlier this week when the lineup got changed and the coach says, hey, this is going to be the lineup for the next, you know, 5-10 games for no reason. Like, it didn't matter. Like, it didn't really impact, you know, winning or losing a game. To me, it doesn't make sense, especially when the rookies are playing well. When the guys are playing at a high level and you're having these kind of things, just can't do stuff like that. I mean, then there's been a lot of, you know, rotation issues. And also, you know what? You know, the coach has to be the backbone. Like, the coach of your team has to be the guy that says, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is how things are done. Right now, when you have a player that, you know, Kobe Bryant has been great for the franchise. We all know he's been awesome. He's done so many different things. He's going to have a statue outside. But when that player is struggling and that player is pretty much being detrimental to the team at times with this play on the court and the coach isn't doing anything about it, that's something I can't roll with. And honestly, it's really difficult for young guys to watch that type of play at times and think that that's okay. So when the coaches are showing any backbone in that regard, I have no choice but to leave an F. And then on to put on top to the point where, you know what, hey, this situation is even doubled with not playing the young guys, you know, benching Julius Randle and D'Angelo Russell for really no apparent reason. No, I have to give an F in this situation.
You know you're not going to get any arguments here. Jordan, what about yours?
If it's not an F, it's a D minus. I mean, and again, we've talked about how you'd have to gauge this team throughout the year, not by wins and losses. That's an arbitrary number. Gauge it by what's happening actually on the court and player development. Now, if you want to say, well, how can you give them anything but an F? They're 3-21. I would say, what do you want the guy to do? I mean, in all honesty, look, I had marginal expectations for this team at the beginning of the season. I didn't think they'd make the playoff, but I thought that they would. You know, I thought if they could get to 30 wins, yeah, we'd call it a successful season. That was really what I thought at the beginning of the year. What do you want them to do? What do you want Byron Scott to do? Now, Jameson tackled several great points as far as the development of the players, and that's how you have to grade. That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're just going to look at it and say, well, they've won 3 games, no, look at it from the development standpoint. But that being said, Byron Scott is a skill gap coach. Nobody outside of the guys that he shared the court with in the 80s and in the early 90s of the Laker organization viewed this guy as the coach that would take the organization into the new era and be the long-term coach. Nobody expected that. Nobody. That's not an expectation for Byron Scott. You've got to keep that in mind. At the same time, I just don't see the development. From a consistency standpoint, Jameson brought up the respect, and that's what it's all about. And I don't think I think a lot of players look at Byron Scott and think, what are you doing? It's an old-school mentality. He hasn't evolved. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. What you get from Byron Scott is what you're going to get from Byron Scott. I definitely don't believe he's going to be back next season. I would be surprised if he is. So, yeah, I can't argue with an F grade. I really can't.
Jordan, you know, listen up. You just need to man up. I'm going to cross my arms and just tell you, man up. All right, yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate all of that on the team. Again, you know, the reason why we offered those grades is because we're about, like I said, we're about a quarter of the way through the season. You know, obviously it'll be an ongoing discussion, and you know, some of those grades and some of those opinions can and likely will change over the course of the season. But we'll just have to wait and see. All right, I actually want to go ahead and transition into our first guest. He is the host of the Instant Offense podcast and a steady contributor to bballbreakdown.com. James Hollis, if you're not familiar with him, folks, he provides great analysis and certainly isn't afraid to mix it up on Twitter, you know, get his troll on from time to time. He's a great follow and somebody that you should definitely seek out if you're on there. James, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Well, that was quite the introduction. I really appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on.
No, absolutely. It's our pleasure. Again, you know, can you get it, folks, your Twitter follow or your Twitter handle so that they can actually check you out?
Oh, yeah. Writing for B-Ball Breakdown, you can follow me on Twitter at Snotty Dripping. And that's an homage to my favorite player of all time, Mr. Scottie Pippen. So, yeah, Snotty Dripping, spelled, like Scottie Pippen would be spelled, except with Snotty and Dripping.
Fair enough. All right, guys. So, you know, I'm sure you heard the lead-in. We were talking about, you know, kind of the Lakers' grades, you know, thus far. I mentioned earlier in the show you cover the entire league, so I'll probably bounce around here and there, but, I'll bring it back to our Lakers. Let me get your opinion, and this is something that we've talked about on this show, you know, a few times over the past couple of weeks. We talked about the rookie watch. The comparisons are going to be inevitable regardless of whether they're fair or not. Obviously each rookie is in a different circumstance and a different situation playing, whether it's, you know, playing in systems and, with coaches that are, you know, promoting their, you know, what they can do out there on the court or not,
right.
To a varying scale. Give me your quick thoughts on, you know, some of the top rookies or the guys, you know, that were at least picked at the top of the class.
I did hear some of you guys' conversation, and D'Angelo's been he's been put in a bad spot. The Lakers have not been conducive to him being the best young point guard that he can be right now because they've been preoccupied with the Kobe show. And some people say that's fair because Kobe has, quote-unquote, earned that right. I kind of disagree, but it seems the last few games that Kobe really has accepted a more complimentary role, and we've seen some really good things from D'Angelo Russell in that time. So I've been saying it the whole time. You know, I've seen a lot of people kind of flip-flop on him and wonder if they made the wrong pick. Now, the guy's talented. I think he's a little further, less developed than we might have thought, and now we're seeing, and he will hopefully see, a lot of growth this season. My one problem is I think even if he gets the minutes now, I don't think Byron Scott is the right coach for him. And I, from what I understand, I guess I hope the Lakers will solve that next season. Jahlil Okafor, he's an enigma for the simple fact that the young man is going to produce and he's talented, but the numbers show that the team has been better with him off the floor. Even tonight, I'm not sure how it ended up. I saw earlier he had a big night tonight, but he was like, you know, he had a net rating of -3, while Nerland was like +3, and they were losing. I get it. The man is going to score and rebound. Jahlil Okafor, he puts me in the mind of Al Jefferson. And as good as Al is, do you want to really build a modern offense around that? So it's tough. But he's a good young kid. I think he's going to be a good, successful piece later on.
If you were running the Lakers, would you have gone that route, or would you have gone, you know, I mean, we can all say, oh, no, of course, Porzingis. But between those two, between, say, Okafor and, Russell, which would you have gone?
I would say I understand why they went Russell. I would want Russell for the simple fact that, yes, he's a point guard, but when I watch him, he brings to mind Brandon Roy, which means even though he's a point guard, the answer should be he can be a lead guard, which means he plays a little bit as a wing. You know, he does things like a wing. He brings the ball up and passes like a point. But he can just affect the game so much more from the perimeter. And like a big man like Jahlil, he needs somebody to feed him the ball. That's the big problem we see in Philly is they have no guards. And so it's really tough for him. It makes life hard for him. And also, you know, the post-up game takes time to set up, takes time to operate. While when you're attacking from the wing position or from the I guess, lead guard position, which D'Angelo would be, he can get the ball and bring it up and just do things, make things happen. So I prefer to build around a guy like D'Angelo than a guy like Jahlil.
Now, James, what's been your thought process on Emmanuel Mudiay in Denver? He's a guy that pretty much they gave him the ball. It's his show to run. What have you thought about him thus far this season, and how do you compare him with D'Angelo Russell?
I absolutely love Moutier's game. When it came, you know, I don't really pay attention to college ball until maybe January, and I'll start watching a lot of the draft breakdown kind of things. And he caught my eye because of his size and how smooth he is. A lot like D'Angelo, he has a lot of developing left to do. And he's at the opposite end of the extremes where they just handed him the ball to go while D'Angelo's been, you know, a lot tightly monitored. But he's bigger and stronger. He seems a little more confident with the ball and stronger with the ball. D'Angelo's a better shooter. The Moutier shot is disgusting. It's pretty ugly right now. But it's going I think it's something that can be worked on. And he has a decent nose for scoring. And the turnovers that people complain about, to me that's a good thing because you're seeing a young point guard who's not scared to try things. If he's still doing that 4 years into the league, then there's a problem. But right now, you know, the team knows that he's the future. They're riding with him. I love what they're doing with him there. I really love watching him play. I think he's going to be really, really good.
All in all, it's been a fun rookie class, I think, front to back. It's been very interesting. Last year's NBA draft, it produced a lot of hype, I guess is the word that you could use for it. Take a look at some of the deeper draft picks. Let's get past the Porzingis, and let's get past Towns and Russell. Let's start talking about guys that were mid-rounders, someone like a Stanley Johnson, maybe a Devin Booker. I mean, how would you assess the middle of this draft, how it translates maybe up against some of the previous drafts that we've had?
I think it's been pretty strong. I know Rashard Vaughn not getting a lot of minutes in Milwaukee, but I like him. I like Justin Anderson. There seems to be a lot of gems sprinkled throughout. Montrezl Harrell, I know he's not getting too many minutes down in Houston, but I think he's going to be a good pro. Guys like Sam Decker, I think they're going to be quality rotation players. So the only one I don't like is Terry Rozier for you know, the team that I kind of root for, the Celtics. I don't know what that was about. But yeah, it was a very deep draft, and I'm shocked by how good some of these rookies have looked. You said it, Justice Winslow. He's doing, even though the numbers don't really pop out, you know, they show the metrics show he's been great down in Miami. So it's been a really deep draft.
Who's the leader of the pack for rookie of the year in each of your opinions?
I'm sorry, it has to be Towns at this point. I mean, I think that he's been the most consistent guy on night in, night out basis. I think at this moment it has to be Towns.
I would have said Towns about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, but he seemed to cooled off a little bit. And being that he's playing in a big market like New York, I think Kristaps right now has the slight edge. Towns is the better player right now, and I think he's going to be the better player for the next couple seasons. But Kristaps' potential is through the roof, and he does so many things out there.
Yeah, I you know what? I'm actually going to agree. I'm going to say the Porzingis right now. If I had a vote, he would definitely get my nod. I think the top three rookies so far this year, another guy that was mentioned was Justice Winslow. So those would be my top three. Karl-Anthony Towns, Porzingis, who would be at the very top, and then go ahead and I'd go with Winslow.
All right, again, we're speaking to James Hollis of bballbreakdown.com. He's the host, once again, of the Instant Offense podcast. Absolutely fantastic stuff there. You want to follow him on Twitter. You want to check out his material for sure. All right, let's go ahead and jump into some rebuild efforts because, you know, you mentioned it, your Celtics. You know, they started theirs, if I'm not mistaken, about a year, you know, a year or two ahead of some of the others. But they appear to be well on their way with Brad Stevens. You know, they definitely appear to have turned things around or look to be headed there. Obviously, the Lakers, you know, they're doing what they're doing, and I think that we'll get a better or a greater sense of what that might look like even next year, following Kobe's career. You know, but let me ask this, you know, like if you were going to rank them, you know, like, because like, look, I've made it no secret. I'm not a big believer in what the Sixers are doing. I could be completely wrong. You know, like, you know, a couple years from now, if they're really deep in the mix, you know, like everybody feel free to go ahead and tell me that I'm wrong. You know, rank the efforts. Tell me if I'm wrong about them. You know, walk me off the ledge with them.
Are we including Orlando in the mix?
Yeah, Orlando as well. Yeah, for sure. Even though they've been rebuilding for the past 5 years too.
Somebody correct me if I'm wrong. They just moved Dwight. Was it 3 seasons ago?
Was it only three?
I think it's only three. Dwight went to L.A. for a season, and now he's in Houston. This is his second or third season in Houston.
Third season in Houston. It's, so yeah, 4 years ago. Yeah. Yeah, you have to forgive us out here in Lakerland, where you know, three bad seasons is like the end of the world. You know, that seems like an eternity. Sorry about that. So go ahead and throw Orlando into that mix as well.
Yeah, so actually, Orlando is my favorite. The pieces they have there, I don't think any of them are maybe a lock for Hall of Fame, but I see a lot of all-star potential in those guys between Oladipo, Vucevic, even Tobias Harris, and then the secondary guys. Even Fournier's been surprising people. They almost have too much young talent that's ready to take that next step in Orlando. I get what people say about Philly. You can't really rank – if you rank Philly by conventional means, then, you know, they're dead last. But that's the whole thing. Hinkie's doing something that's trying to, quote-unquote, turn things on its head. And, I mean, right now the assets are there. So, as of right this very second, they're dead last because they're going to lose a lot of ball games now and they're still not really trying to win. But I see what he's doing, and I'm not against the process as a lot are, but watching how disappointed Jahlil Okafor has been this season has actually bring me around, because I don't think it would, quote-unquote, ruin a player for this to happen. But you don't know how it's going to affect these guys as far as even later this season and moving forward. So I do get the complaints about the quote-unquote process. The Celtics should be number one because they've already made the playoffs and it looks like they're even going to be better this season. I'm of the note, though, stars still drive the NBA. And the two ways to get stars, or three ways, you trade for them, you sign one with a free agent, or you draft one. And I wish they had given themselves a shot last year to draft a potential young star, and it didn't happen. So now it's all they're at the mercy of, will another team trade us a star, or will someone look at what we have and try to sign here? So it's – the Celtics right now, though, they're the leaders. I think the Lakers should be Celtics and Orlando, I think Lakers are right behind them, though, because they have the pieces, and they potentially, with Byron Scott in place, is a good thing because he might save them their draft pick this year. He's not a good coach, but I keep saying it's a secret tank. They're keeping him in there, and they're like, oh, yeah, we got this coach in here. But no, they know he's going to lose a lot of games, and he might save that top three protected pick.
Which of those teams do you think is most likely to get, you know, to sign a top name free agent? If you're a top name free agent, which would you lead? Like, let's say that, which would you rather go to?
With the caveat, if the Lakers after the season move on from Byron Scott and get a real coach in, with D'Angelo Russell and Randall and even Clarkson, that's probably the better place. Oh, I'm sorry. What am I thinking? Because Boston actually, right the very second, Boston with that coach, Brad Stevens is a genius. I love him. And they have the framework. They have all the role players. So right now, at this moment, I'd say Boston. If the Lakers move on and decide, you know, let's get a better coach in here, and Kobe retires, that team is very attractive. But that very second, I'd have to say Boston would be the team people would look at.
Interesting. Now, that's very interesting. Well, first and foremost, the Sixers are, I think, last in this situation just because of the environment that the situation currently breeds in. You know, just a situation where, you know, everyone knows you're losing games, and like you mentioned, the whole Jahlil Okafor situation. You know, you have a bunch of young guys, but you don't have any veteran presence on that team. So you have a bunch of young guys, but you're not really developing them. You're just pretty much saying we're going to lose a bunch of games, and we're going to try to get a really good player next year in next year's draft. We know the draft is an exact science. It's a really bad situation for rebuilding because you're just starting over every year, and the talent they're getting isn't like, you know, league-changing talent. It's not like, all right, well, we get this guy, we're about to take the league by storm next year. It's not really the case. I mean, they got a guy in Dario Saric who's not in any hurry to come overseas. Like, he's not in any hurry to, you know, clear customs. He's just not. So this is a really bad situation. Even though they have a lot of picks, a lot of assets and whatnot, I think Philly is last. Now, a team that I haven't heard anyone mention yet, the New York Knicks. The Knicks are a little bit better position than I think a lot of people thought they would be in this situation. With Porzingis being the player he thought he is, the Knicks have been a little bit better. I think Phil Jackson knows a little bit what he's doing over there. I think that's a place where I don't know if they can draw free agents because free agents really don't go to New York like that. But I think they're a little bit closer to the top of the list than I think many of us would have thought 6 months ago. But I do agree with the two of you guys. Boston, the Lakers are probably two teams that have a really bright future when it comes to rebuilding situations, only because, one, Boston has a boatload of picks and a boatload of assets to make any trade happen. I mean, they pretty much swung a home run trade for Justice Winslow in last year's draft before, you know, Charlotte turned it down. So there's a lot of potential there, but also the Lakers, like you mentioned, they get a real coach, whether it's Tom Thibodeau or Luke Walton or Scott Brooks or whomever it may be. They're right there, you know, with turning over the team to the younger players. And Boston with their assets, I think Boston's, you know, very interesting situation. But Orlando, to me, it's weird because Orlando has a lot of pieces, but do those pieces fit? And do you need to make a move to make the fit better? And I didn't like, you know, Scott Skiles, you know, putting Oladipo on the bench, moving into the second unit. But we'll see if those pieces fit long term. But if I had to rank it, I would go Boston, L.A., and, you know, I would add New York because they're, I mean, they're not that good this year, but you can see a couple more picks. Well, they don't have any picks, but a couple more moves because still they're making some pretty decent moves. They might be a little bit further along than we all thought.
Real quick, my thing with New York, you're exactly right. Phil Jackson did a bang-up job this offseason adding talent. And, you know, I think Chris Stapps was a daring pick, and it really panned out. I think he's going to be great. The problem with that is if we're moving forward, are we saying that they move Carmelo? Because I think that's the fly in the ointment with them. Carmelo can still be a valuable piece on a quality team, but he doesn't fit with what they're doing. They went younger, and they're rebuilding from the ground up, and you have this star who's probably on the downside of – or starting to be on the downside of his prime. And he's a high-volume guy on a team that's going to work with ball movement. So I think that's the elephant in the room there, and I'm hoping they move him sometime soon. Because, I mean, you know, I want to see him go to a winning situation, and, yeah, he just doesn't really fit in New York.
What's the best situation for him?
I'm going to steal somebody else's idea. They brought this up to my attention. I'd like to see him go to Washington. I think that the Wizards might strike out on KD, but Melo would be a nice little booby prize, a nice consolation prize for him. And even if they move Beal in that deal, I think Wall and Melo and whoever else they can cobble around them, that's a lot better than the Knicks right now for the short term. And I think Wall would help Melo a lot.
I always said Chicago. I always thought if Melo could wind up in Chicago, it would definitely help them out because, one, the Derrick Rose being a guy you have to depend on, you know, in the playoffs is something that is not going to happen. Like, it's not going to consistently happen. He may have a game or two where he, you know, shows out and plays well, but we know going forward he's not a guy that you can depend on being a first or second option. I always thought Chicago would be the better pick for Melo just based off he can fit in well there. He's a guy that they need a guy on the perimeter that can make things happen next to Jimmy Butler. If they can make that happen, they have the players and assets to do so, whether they want to, a different story. But they have the pieces to make any kind of trade work for a guy like Melo. Plus, it depends what their window is. Because right now, they seem like they're a piece away. Chicago's been a piece away like the last 4 or 5 years now. Seems like Melo could be that guy. And I think Melo's probably looking forward to being contending because all his friends are pretty much playing for, you know, or competing for championships in the league or at least, you know, being competitive in the playoffs. He hasn't really done that so in the last couple of years. So I'm looking to see if he were to be moved, I think Chicago would be the best place.
I would agree with that if this was a year and a half ago. I think that the Chicago ship has kind of sailed. I'm not seeing the window slam shut yet, but I don't think Derrick Rose has that type of potential anymore where, you know, before it was add another piece to Derrick Rose and Jimmy Butler and this defense, and we got ourselves a contender. I don't know if Rose is going to regain that form, and I don't like what I'm seeing from that team right now as far as fit. I think Noah's about cooked. I think Powell is about a couple steps from being cooked as far as being a really true impact player. So that's my issue with Chicago right now.
I kind of feel like, you know, just kind of wrapping that on Chicago, and of course we're going to turn it over to Jordan. I kind of feel like last year was that last year for Powell. You know, he went over there. The fit was great. He kind of did his thing. He had a resurgence. Was in great shape. Not saying that he's not going to be effective, you know, over these next couple of years, but, you know, am I slamming the door shut on him too early, or do you guys agree with that?
No, I think right now, same with Powell, he's going to get good numbers because that's what he does, but is he going to be really an impact type player? I think he'll always be able to get quick 15-8 or, you know, even some nights 24-12, but for as far as somebody you're really building around, I don't think he's that guy anymore.
Well, I'll go back to rebuild because I definitely agree that the Orlando Magic are ahead of the curve, and I know the Boston Celtics have the assets moving forward that I think pretty much any team in the NBA would be envious of. But if we consider the Orlando Magic a rebuild team, I'm going to go back, and I'm actually going to talk about the Utah Jazz here because in 2012, Dennis Lindsay decided to, you know, they announced Dennis Lindsay as the general manager, and I think ever since Lindsay has taken over in Utah, there is a different vibe around this team. You got to remember that they traded at that time an all-star point guard in Deron Williams. And from that point on, they've actually have some nice assets. Rudy Gobert has been very, very solid. I think Rudy Gobert is on his way to becoming one, if not one of one of the best centers in the NBA. Derek Favors has proven that he can be a an 18-10, 18-12 guy. I'm still not in love with the Gordon Hayward signing here recently when they gave him the max deal, but in Utah they've had a hard time attracting free agents. I think this team's a point guard away from really being, really getting to that next level. I'm a huge Quinn Snyder guy. I think he's done wonders with his organization. So if I can count Orlando as a rebuild squad, going back, to 2012, 2011, I got to put the Jazz in there as well. I think the Jazz have done wonders with what they've had to work with. And I'm a big Dennis Lindsay guy. I was a Dennis Lindsay guy before he came to Utah, just because I love taking a look at general manager trees, the same way we can look at coaching trees. So those would be my top three teams right now.
That's actually a good point. And you know what? That's one that we hadn't considered, especially given the second half, that Utah put together, or the way they turned things around last year and the second half that they put together, that was one of the, that was one of the things that we were hoping to see out of these Lakers this year. And, and we may still see it, not necessarily to the tune of 24-10 or so, whatever that stretch was, but, kind of building along the way and improving, down the stretch of the season. So no, that's actually a great point. Any arguments there with that one, James, on Utah being actually one of the more impressive rebuilds?
I mean, hey, like he said, we're putting Orlando in there. You got to put them in there too, and that's a really good point. So I'd actually probably looking right now for this on the strength of Derek Favors and Gordon Hayward, I would say right now they're a little bit ahead of even Boston, even though Boston made the playoffs in the East. I like Utah better. Their roster construction plus Rudy Gobert and young Dante will come back next season. They I think are better framed for success than Boston right now.
All right. Great stuff, man. Again, this is James Hollis of bballbreakdown.com. He's also the host of the Instant Offense podcast. Before we get you out of here, I'm sure you knew this was coming. We have to get
Let's
this.
Now,
last week we did our favorite Kobe moments. I'm not going to open that door to you, but what I will say is I understand that Kobe Bryant has not necessarily been your favorite player, and I actually get your objections to his style and his approach. But given the fact that he has been a successful individual at to a pretty high level in this league, I would imagine at least from the outside looking in, the rival you would have had a strong opinion on his career. So as our resident Boston Celtics aficionado, as our resident Kobe Bryant, I don't want to say hater, but a person
no,
that certainly
go ahead and
does
say it.
Not appreciate.
I'm a proud Kobe Bryant hater. Go ahead and say it.
Okay. All right. Resident Kobe Bryant hater. What has his career meant to you? And you can be real with us. What has his career meant to you? Where do you think he's going to go down? In history. And will you miss? I guess you could say hating on him when it's all said and done.
I will say it. I will give Kobe Bryant's tip of my hat. I'll give him kudos. For the last four games, when he's throttled back the silly shots, he's only taken 5 threes a game at 35%, and I think it seems like he's actually come to terms with his physical limitations. I'm going to tip my hat to that, and if he continues this, I hope the rest of his farewell tour is as painless as possible for him, and he can just go out into the sunset, on a lottery team. Kobe Bryant's an all-time great. He's the closest thing to happen. He did his thing, and he found a player to emulate, and he emulated him down to the walk and the way he chewed his gum in Michael Jordan for a while. But then I give him credit. He struck off on his own, and he became his own person. He had his off-court missteps, and his ego and his arrogance is well-known and documented, and I think it plays a lot into – it's one of his greatest strengths because he thinks he can do everything on the court, and one of his greatest weaknesses because it alienated a lot of teammates and – it made him incredibly hard to play with. But when you have that kind of talent and you're that kind of physical specimen and you can drop 45 for a month or some of the things he's done, you can drop 81 in the game, the NBA is a spectacle. It's entertainment, and the man has been entertaining, if nothing else, because from one side, there's people who love him and idolize him. There's people like me who I'm ready to see him hang him up, and I've been ready to see him hang him up. He's, we've had some legendary battles with Boston. I think as great as he is, some fans may slightly overrate him, and that's okay because they're fans. And he's going out as a top, top I don't have him in my personal top 10, but I see why people do. They love the man. To some people, he's their Michael Jordan. So he's going out as a top, I say, 12, 15 player ever, which, you know, in a league that's had thousands of guys come through, that's, to me, is a huge compliment to him and a huge testament
that sounded
to
like
his,
that hurt.
His power.
That sounded like that hurt you to say.
Oh, no, not at all. But the fact is, you know what? I say this, I've said this for years, and I get killed for it because they're like, I've tweeted this before, and he's not top five, he's not top 10, you're a hater. So no matter what I say, it's going to be hating. He was an incredible talent. He hung on, you know, 3 years too long, which some guys do. This season was an embarrassment. There's no other way to say it until recently. I heard someone saying this earlier. If he didn't embrace this role from the get-go, I think the articles wouldn't have been written, the complaints by Kevin Durant wouldn't have happened. So, but it's about ego, and I think finally his reality caught up to his ego, and that's. I tip my hat. If he can hold on to this level of play for the rest of the season, then, you know, I think finally he's got it. And it's taken longer than a lot of people would have ever thought, but he's finally gotten it, and he's proven himself that he's ready to usher in the next era for the Lakers.
Now, James, before we let you go, do you have any work coming out or anything, any projects we should be looking out for?
You guys can check me out on B-Ball Breakdown. I did a Melo piece actually talking a little bit about my feelings on Melo. And how he's linked in a way to DeMarcus Cousins. It's pretty interesting, I think. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of my own work, but I people seem to like that one. I'm just doing the podcast.
Oh, stop being modest.
No, hey, I'm a weekend hack writer, man. The fact that I think more people follow me because of the Temecula thing than anything else. So that's why there's nothing to be proud of there. You guys check out B-Ball Breakdown. We got a lot of really good writers. We got a lot of really interesting things coming out in the next few months. We have a really nice Paul George versus Kawhi Leonard piece with me and Jesse Blanchard coming out within the next week. So something to keep your eye on. But yeah, B-Ball Breakdown. We're just trying to get like you guys, man. You guys are top notch, and we're trying to step our game up.
You are far too kind, absolutely far too kind. But again, we definitely appreciate you taking the time today, man. He is James Hollis of bballbreakdown.com at Snotty Drippin on Twitter. He's being modest. He definitely knows his stuff. I mean, you know, like you, evidenced by his appearance here today, but you definitely want to check out his material because it's top-notch. I mean, thanks again for joining us, James.
All right, fellas, man. Thanks for having me on.
Not a problem. Appreciate it.
Oh, no, absolutely. All right, again, that was James Hollis of bballbreakdown.com. Whether you agree with everything he said or disagree with everything he said, I definitely recommend you checking out his material. A high quality follow on Twitter, definitely entertaining, as enlightening as he is entertaining, and you know that type of balance is somewhat rare. All right, so stick with us here. We're going to take a very short break, but when we come back, we're going to be joined by LakersNation.com's very own Serena Winters.
My name is Serena Winters, and this is my Lakers Nation Spotlight. I have been with the website since 2012. I have supported the game of basketball since I can remember. Basketball was the first sport I played, so I've always supported it. And the Lakers are the first team that I can remember supporting, specifically from my grandma and grandpa. They were big Lakers fans, so I would watch the games with them. I don't currently have a favorite song. It 100% depends on my mood, but I can tell you that the last song that I can remember playing over and over in my car was a song called You Know You Like It by DJ Snake and Aluna George, and pretty much anything Fetty Wap right now, but I'm sure I'll get out of that phase pretty soon. My favorite all-time musician, singer, band, again, it completely depends on my mood, but I can tell you that when I was in high school and college, I had a Sublime poster on my room, and that thing traveled with me for over 8 years. So I was a big Sublime fan as a kid. That was the first CD I can remember buying. My favorite thing or place to eat in LA. Let's see, my favorite thing in LA has to be Staples Center. That's near and dear to my heart. And plus, since I work there all the time, I feel like it's my second home. And my favorite thing to do in LA is go to brand new restaurants that I've never been to. So the last one I went to a few weeks ago was Scarpetta in the Montage, and that was absolutely delicious. My favorite NBA player to watch growing up was Kobe Bryant, and my favorite all-time Laker is Derek Fisher. It's great to be a part of Lakers Nation. I feel very fortunate that I get to connect with the fan base and provide fans an information source and news about the Lakers. It's something that if you asked me when I was 17 years old what I wanted to be doing, this is it. So I feel very fortunate. My favorite Kobe Bryant moment is when he knocked down two free throws with a torn Achilles, because it just shows what type of athlete Kobe is, shows his mentality, his give everything he has. There's no other player in the NBA to have ever done that, and it also makes me laugh when I think of Paul Pierce being rolled out on a wheelchair after growing up a Lakers fan.
Welcome back to your Lakers Nation podcast, and now I want to welcome in LakersNation.com's lead reporter and occasional Time Warner Sportsnet personality, Serena Winters, to the show. Serena, thank you for joining us this week.
Of course, Jabari. It's my pleasure to be on here with all the Lakers fans listening.
Absolutely, and it is truly our pleasure, so you know, your time is appreciated. Just as a bit of background before I get into a few of the questions, Serena, can you give the listeners, I guess, your quick background, how long you've been covering the team and with the site?
Yeah, sure. I have been with Lakers Nation since 2012. So I've been covering the Lakers as a reporter since the 2012-13 season. So it's been great being on for that long and getting to follow the end of Kobe Bryant's journey, since I grew up watching the beginning of it.
Fair enough. And folks, you know, I just want to make it clear about what she does. You know, work in the locker room, the press conferences, the practices, that is not easy. So I have personally, I have a tremendous amount of respect for the amount of preparation and effort that actually goes into, putting it together after seeing her in action this last couple seasons. All right, so let's go ahead and jump right into it, if you don't mind. You know, it's been a tough season. Somewhat to be expected, at least on this end. We'll get to what your expectations were compared to your feelings in a minute here. But just what have been your thoughts on the team thus far?
You know, going into the season, I expected this team probably to be about 10 wins better than last year's squad. But obviously looking at the record right now, I was a bit wrong on that. But, you know, it's been great to see Jordan Clarkson do so well this season. I wasn't sure how well his success from last year would translate into this year just because of the roster that he was on. But being able to see that he's really picked up right where he left off and add a three-point game and connect with these younger guys, I think that's been great. And finally getting a chance to see D'Angelo Russell kind of break out a little bit, that's been great. And his connection with Julius Randle. And with Julius, I mean, I think that he's a guy we might be talking about, you know, years down the line as being an all-star, a great guy in this league. Even at, you know, just 21 years old right now, he's leading the league in a lot of categories, or at least doing very well in terms of double-doubles and crashing the board. So, you know, that's been great. And then, you know, we have the storyline of Kobe, which is a very interesting one, with him making his announcement and kind of an interesting one in terms of the inner workings with how he's teaching the younger guys. And so, you know, the thing is, in Lakerland, you love it or hate it, there's always something to talk about. And that's kind of what makes this team so great.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm just going to follow, I'm going to piggyback right on that last point, because I'm sure you saw it a little bit, you know, later on, late in the week last week, I saw that Larry Nance Jr., he took to the Players Tribune, and I love that site for these very reasons, but he took to it in order to kind of debunk some of the current narrative surrounding the team. I guess the claims that Kobe Bryant's play has been a detriment to the development of the young core players. What's been your take on that?
In terms of Kobe Bryant being a detriment to the young players?
Well, it's just the style of play so far.
Well, you know, you could argue so many different things, right? It all depends on what side of the story you're going to take. you could argue that Kobe Bryant being in the game, right, with D'Angelo Russell, for example, is going to hinder D'Angelo Russell's development because he's going to defer more to Kobe. He's not going to have, you know, that natural instinct about him, whether or not he should pass, whether or not he should pull up, because in the back of his mind, he's got, you know, Kobe Bryant, one of the greatest to ever play the game, on the floor alongside him. You could make that point, right? And then you could look at D'Angelo Russell when he's not in the game with Kobe Bryant and see that he looks a little bit more natural out there. There's more ball movement out there. But that's to be expected. Whether or not that's D'Angelo Russell, whether or not that's Kobe in the game versus another, you know, big-time player in the game. Because as a young guy at 19 years old, when you're in the game with one of the best to ever play it and somebody that you've looked up to and, you know, somebody that, you know, whether or not you idolized him growing up, you sure knew who he was. You're going to be taken back a little bit with him being on the floor, and you're going to defer to him in certain scenarios. That I completely understand. So that logic does all make sense to me. But at the same time, to say that Kobe is taking away from these young guys, I don't see that either. Because if you ask any of these guys, would you rather have Kobe in his last year on the team with you, or would you not? I mean, you would be an absolute idiot to say that you wouldn't want him on the team. Because this guy has 20 years of experience and is teaching these young guys things that no one else can teach them. The little intricacies of the game, you know, that you don't know or that I don't know, of matching up with certain guys defensively for the past 15 to 20 years. So no matter what, Kobe is teaching these young guys something. And either way, you could make an argument whether it's positive or negative. You know, sometimes, you know, I struggle with the fact that Kobe a lot of times is not practicing, right? So, and Kobe's starting game. So is that, could you say that that is a negative for these guys? Sure, because Kobe a lot of times isn't out there at the walkthroughs, or he's not out there practicing in the starting five, and then all of a sudden, come game time, he's going to be in the starting five, these young guys. Obviously, the starting lineup has changed now, but you get my point. So you can really argue it either way, but at the end of the day, you know, this is, you're not going to have it any other way. And this is Kobe's last season, his 20th year, and he's going to play. So you can make whatever argument you want, but I don't think that Kobe is hindering their development in a sense of he's able to give them knowledge of the game and teach them certain things. And whether you're at the game or you're watching the game on TV, you can see Kobe talking with the young guys. If you watch, you know, the last game, he's immediately talking with D'Angelo Russell after the Lakers lost in overtime when Kobe was on the bench, you know, and D'Angelo had a chance to win the game. And what's he doing? He's going over, talking to D'Angelo, you know, telling him, you know, you're going to make that shot. You're going to miss that shot. I've missed that shot a million times in my career. That's the type of stuff that you can't get on any other team. So I see it as a positive that he gets this last year with these guys.
Those are all excellent points. And again, you know, we appreciate your time. We're speaking to Serena Winters, lead reporter of LakersNation.com here on the podcast. You know, I've described Kobe as a walking, talking, shooting basketball encyclopedia. To your point, you cannot get that anywhere else. Maybe outside of KG with the young pups over there with the Timberwolves, but outside of that, you know, you're not going to get that. You're not going to get that type of, you know, that type of knowledge, or, you know, that type of deep, you know, deeply rooted NBA knowledge that they, you know, that those guys have. But, you know, since, even though they've been on the road, you know, for what seems like the entire season, you're one of the individuals that is behind the scenes. You do get to go into the locker room. You do get to see them, you know, like after practice. You do get to interact with the players. What has been the vibe amongst the players for the most part?
You know, these players definitely like each other. So, you know, when you're in the locker room post game, whether or not these guys like each other really isn't a problem. They're laughing with each other, you know, pregame. Obviously, when you lose so much, the vibe and the mood, as to be expected, if it wasn't down, I'd be concerned, is going to be extremely down in the locker room when you only have three wins of the season. But But you can tell that these guys still like each other. You know, they try to pick each other up. The veterans usually in post-game interviews will figure out a way to fit in something positive the young guys are doing, or that this is something they have to go through. So behind the scenes, I mean, it seems to me like all of these guys get along. Whether or not you think that's important, you know, that's kind of up to you, whether or not you as a fan think it's important that they do or they don't. But I think they do. And these guys, especially D'Angelo and Julius Randle, you can see not just on the court, but also behind the scenes that they hang out. Also Jordan Clarkson. So that's something where, if you think that this is going to be a young core of the future, you want these guys building some type of relationship even off the court, right? So that's something that you could say mm-hmm. is a positive.
Absolutely. You know, whether fans think that that's important or not, you know, I'm here to say, I'm here to agree with you. It absolutely is. You know, that type of chemistry. Here's the thing. Players and teammates don't have to, you know, walk around, you know, singing kumbaya, you know, holding hands and skipping along, you know, every 5 seconds.
Oh, absolutely not.
But of course, you want there to be a certain amount of companionship, a certain amount of camaraderie, and you want the type of chemistry to develop that they'll play for one another, no matter what the relationship is like. So no, I that's definitely good to hear. Okay, let's go ahead and
you hit it on the head right there, though, real quick, though, Jabari, as you said, what that made me think of was that what's important isn't whether or not, you know, necessarily they like each other, but if you can respect one another, that means that you're going to hold each other accountable, right, on the court. And that's ultimately what's important, because if you can hold each other accountable on the court, then you can produce, if you got the talent, a pretty decent basketball team. You know what I mean? So that kind of comes all from whether or not you're, like you said, saying kumbaya, or whether or not you're going out to lunch and dinner, that doesn't really matter. But if you have enough of a relationship, certainly those things can help. Then you're going to hold your teammates accountable, and that's really important.
Without a doubt, especially as you're developing young players. Absolutely. All right, you know, we can't really avoid it. Let's go ahead and get to the Byron Scott of it all before we run out of time. not to put you in a bad spot, but you know, this is a common conversation. I'm sure you've heard of, you know, all the back and forth on whether, you know, Coach Scott should be on the hot seat or even the ejector seat, according to some. I'm of the mm-hmm. opinion that while I disagree with, you know, some of his tactics and, you know, his approach in general, I don't necessarily see, you know, the benefits from, you know, cutting bait and moving on midway through the season. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts? You know, what are your thoughts on his tenure, on the coaching staff in general? Do you feel as though they've lost any of these guys? Are there any issues, you know, that need to be worked out? You know, what's going on there?
You know, to me, it's a bit of an interesting situation, because I think it's very fair to criticize, at least what we've seen on the outside, some of Byron Scott's decision making, and that's anything from when you're starting D'Angelo Russell at the beginning of the season, having him play off ball, which, mm-hmm. you know, was a decision in itself that many questioned. But if you're going to make that decision to do that, then I would assume that you would stick with it for, you know, at least 5 to 10 games, right? So you make that decision, but then you go back on it after a game and decide that, no, he needs to be playing, you know, on the ball, you know, those types of things, right? To things like, you know, talking with the media about Kobe and saying things like he's earned, you know, the right to take certain mm-hmm. shots, you know, and this, that, and the other. And, you know, whether Kobe has earned that right or not, you know, of course he's played 20 years in the NBA. It's the final season. I get it. I get all of that. I get it. But, you know, to tell the media that it's a privilege that Kobe has that other players don't have, to me, that's kind of a sticky situation, right? Because how does that make you look as a head coach, that you give that type of privilege to just the one guy? And again, I get it. I get that he's, you know, 20-year vet and it's his last year, but it's those types of things that kind of make you question, or even if he does think that, even if in the back of Byron's mind that really is what he thinks, you know, I would think from a head coaching perspective, you probably wouldn't want to say that, for example, to the media. Because if you're, whether or not you're a first-year player or a second-year player or a third-year player, and he did mention, you know, first, second, or third-year players, if you look at a quote like that, don't you got to kind of laugh or kind of roll your eyes, you know? You got to imagine people are talking about that type of stuff. So those are the types of things. And then, you know, obviously the recent lineup change, that's an interesting one. What I do like about the lineup change, though, Jabari, is that at least he kept D'Angelo Russell together with Julius Randle.
Absolutely.
I think that was important to do that. So definitely props on that. If you're gonna move him out of the starting lineup, if you're gonna give him the minutes and play alongside Julius and we get to see that, then great. And obviously with the last game, they got to close it out both in the fourth quarter and then sending the game to overtime. You know, those are building blocks that they really need. But then again, Jabari, what happens at the end of the game when talking to the media, you know, rather than say, you know, this is a decision I made, whatever it is, we come to find out that it was Kobe on the bench who said, you know, no, Byron, let these young guys play. Right?
Coach Kobe.
So exactly. So it's one of those things where I see the criticisms, you know, and I get them. I definitely do. And there's things that raise eyebrows, you know, that raise eyebrows to me as well. Because, you know, with this whole Kobe hoopla, you know, you're going to get stuff like this. And it's just kind of funny, too, when you can kind of make jokes about, who is coaching these young guys right now? So it was Kobe's decision to keep the young guys in the game. So if it was Kobe's decision, then what does that, you know, kind of say about you, per se, as an authority figure, right? So it's just kind of those things that make me question. But at the same time, Jabari, I mean, the Lakers are in a spot where Mike Brown, Mike D'Antoni,
mm-hmm.
What are you going to do? Get rid of Byron Scott in the middle of the season? I don't think so. You know, what if your whole goal and purpose is to have this young core and lure free agents, I mean, hello.
I totally agree with you. You know, like the midway through the season thing, the only reason why you would do that is if you have your next coach, the guy that you have, like, you know, this is the guy that's going to grow with these guys in line.
Right.
If you don't, it would just be a rash decision, in my opinion.
Sure. But Byron has been placed kind of by Mitch and by, you know, remember the press conference, they had you know, Magic Johnson there. You know, had all former Lakers there bringing
Jamal
the support
Wilkes.
For this guy, mm-hmm. Jamal Wilkes there, right? The legends were there to bring support for this new era. See, it's interesting because you kind of already made the statement that this is your guy. You know, we are mm-hmm. moving with him through thick and thin. But, I mean, I got to imagine that some players would kind of question that, right? And we haven't even talked about, for example, those tweets we saw from, Darius Morris the other night, right?
Oh, yeah.
About him saying, you know, basically kind of attacking Byron Scott, saying it's his problem, you know, not the team's problem when you've got a coach with that type of win-loss record. So it makes me realize that, you know, the media or fans aren't the only ones thinking that if you have, you know, former players coming out and saying that. I can only imagine, you know, somebody who's not in the NBA, obviously players that are in the NBA aren't going to be stupid enough to tweet something like that, but if somebody is saying that, you know, I'm sure there's others that think it, right, that just are smart enough to stay away from social media.
exactly. What's being said behind closed doors, and while it may not come out to social media, it will come into play, or it could potentially come into play next summer, you know, for instance, when they're, you know, right back to the drawing board. I don't know necessarily with the new head coach, but when they're trying to, you know, pursue potential free agents. All right, last thing mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you, and it is, I am going to put you on the spot, and it's just before I ask you for, you know, some Kobe moments. I've been of the opinion that while, again, I wouldn't fire Byron Scott midway through the season, I do think that his, you know, sort of his shelf life lasts as long as Kobe's does. And obviously, in mm-hmm. my opinion, that means at the end of the year, your gut instinct, Is Byron the head coach next year? And if not, who are some, you know, who are some names? And again, I know that this kind of puts you, you know, in a spot, so you don't have to necessarily go there if you don't want to. But if you do, who are some names that you, you know, that that are interesting to you?
Whew. Let's see. What does my gut tell me? I am going to say that Byron is the coach next year.
Ooh, okay. All right.
That's what I'm going to say.
With any stipulations, or like, you know, kind of head into the year, see, you know, see what it, you know, see what it looks like, or do you think he even finishes that year? Which is, you know, for the record, for the listeners out there, again, we're speaking to Serena Winters of, you know, LakersNation.com. But for the record, next year will be his third and final guaranteed year of that contract.
You know, it's hard because it looks like the Lakers are going to have another season that would be their worst in franchise history, and I hate it. Even it, God, it hurts me to say that. It really does hurt me to say that.
Three straight.
I know, Jabari. So I can't imagine that from a management perspective, you allow that, right? Because you want to see at least some improvement. So that's kind of, that's the part of me that, you know, that says, man, can he be the coach next year? But in terms of everything that I've heard and with Mitch Kupchak and with what he has said and with the commitment that they have to him, and knowing that going into hiring Byron Scott, this was the guy that they were going to have for the future, it's hard to, for me to say he's not going to be the head coach next year.
That's fair. That's fair. And we can leave that there again, because I know given the fact that you've got to, you know, you're going to be asking them questions tonight, okay? You're going to be asking them questions, so I understand. I don't want to put you, you know, totally put you on the spot. We'll ask you again toward the end of the season. Maybe that opinion will have changed. Before we run out of time, I know that you gave some of them in your rundown for your, you know, for your Lakers Nation spotlight, but can you give us, you know, us and the listeners, any Kobe moments? Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be on the court. It could be behind the scenes. It could be, you know, a laugh that you guys have shared. You know, what feed into our Kobe frenzy here on Lakers Nation podcast.
Key into the Kobe frenzy. You know, I will say this: is I've seen Kobe so many times after the games, just smiling, chatting with kids, and it's usually kids from the Make-A-Wish Foundation. But I love seeing that. And I'm lucky to have been able to cover him kind of towards the end of his career, where he is a lot, you know, kinder, I feel like, towards the media on the last years of his career, where he can just chat with you. I've chatted with him just about football and, you know, non-basketball related things. One of my personal favorite Kobe moments was I was in the tunnel at a Lakers game, and I was chatting with a woman who I had never met, but was a very powerful woman, and I wanted to sit down and have lunch or coffee with her, and who comes up behind me and taps me on the shoulder, but Kobe, and says to the woman, you know, she's good people. And that was just, you know, having Kobe come over and vouch for me, you know, that was great for me personally. On the court moments, man, for me, it's like you can talk so much about his individual accomplishments, like his 81-point game, which is just unbelievable individually. But I'm someone who looks at moments and what type of person they are, what type of athlete they are, what it says about what they've given to the sport for 20 years. And I really, really think that those two free throws that Kobe knocked down with a torn Achilles, literally hobbling over to the charity stripe, knocking them down with a ruptured freaking Achilles. That moment to me was showing what he's given to the NBA, what he's given to the sport, what he has portrayed himself to be. Whether you like him, whether you hate him, it doesn't matter. You can that he is a guy who has given every ounce of energy to this game, to the fans. and they almost poetically won by 2 points, you know, that night. Mm-hmm. And it was those two free throws that were 2 points. And that for me is just my all-time favorite Kobe moment. Also, I was there for the Game 7 2010 win against the Boston Celtics. And, you know, Kobe didn't even have that phenomenal of a game. But that was the last championship. You know, I was there for that. That was, you know, that was awesome. I loved being there. And I remember with the confetti coming down and looking at Kobe on the court and looking at, you know, Ron Artest. And it was just, mm-hmm. that was just, you know, personally also one of my favorite Kobe moments, just because I got to experience that and be there, you know, in the moment. So those are some of my favorite Kobe memories.
Love, absolutely love it. You know, it's funny, my current background on my laptop is that moment, you know, when they won, with Paul Pierce just kind of like slumping off to the side, you know, moping off to the side. So yeah, I'm right there with you. That was a fantastic moment. You know, obviously a great memory. Serena, thank you so much once again for your time today. We appreciate you joining us. Can you also let the folks know, you know, the folks that have Twitter, you know, where they can find all of your material, whether it's on YouTube, you know, kind of across the board?
Yeah, of course. My personal Twitter account is my name, so just at Serena Winters. I do have an Instagram account. Somebody already has the at Serena Winters, so I had to take the at Serena _ Winters if you're interested in that. All of the, for YouTube, youtube.com/LakersNation, that's where you can find all of our post-game stuff, our practice stuff. You know, I go to all the charity events and things like that and do some behind-the-scenes stuff as well. So the YouTube channel. So those are the main places. I did just start a Snapchat because fans have requested it, but I'll be honest, I have not figured it out yet. It's making me feel extremely old because it's like, apparently it's like the hottest thing in social media right now, and I just cannot yet bring myself to do it. And I even have, like, when I was in Hawaii during training camp, Sam Amick was next to me just learning how to figure it out, and he's like totally into it now, and he's showing me things, and, you know, Sam's older than I am with a family and kids, and I'm like, man, you are way hipper than I am. But I think my Snapchat is like serena.winters or something like that, but I have not posted anything yet. Maybe tonight will be my first post. We'll have to see.
Nice, nice. You know, I honestly, you made me feel a little bit better, because even though I'm older than you as well, I couldn't figure it out either. I have a Snapchat. I don't even know what my profile name is, because I couldn't figure the darn thing out.
I'm glad I'm not the only one. I do have Facebook. It's just like, I believe my name is just my name, Serena Winters. You guys can follow me on there. It's pretty simple. Unlike Snapchat, just seems so difficult, but apparently it's easy, and I'm just old and lame.
and of course, there's young cats out there right now going like, Snapchat, that's old. I'm sure there's something new and, you know, a bigger, brighter, and better. But, you know, we digress. Serena, thank you so much once again for joining the show. Really appreciate your time. Hope to get you. And I'm not just saying this. Hope to get you again within the next few weeks, and kind of stay in tune with you over the course of the season.
Sure thing.
This is Tarik Black, and you're listening to Lakers Nation podcast.
Oh, I got some. He's built like Tarzan. He don't play like Jane.
Oh wow.
He don't play like Jane.
All right, welcome back here on your Lakers Nation podcast. Great stuff with both James as well as Serena. But before we run out of time, I want to go ahead and get a final shot from each of you guys. Jameson, why don't you lead us off?
Our biggest final shot is right now for the young guys, D'Angelo Russell, namely, and Julius Randle. Earlier this week, they were pretty much, you know, benched in a sense. And really, for no rhyme or reason, they were just benched. They were told that, hey, you know what, we're going to try a different lineup and try to improve things. And that could have went one of two ways. It could have went, well, you know what, as a player, you could have sulked and complained and made things really difficult on everyone in the situation. Or, you know what, took it in stride and just, you know, did what they did. And for the most part, both guys took it in stride, didn't make a huge scene out of it, and have produced pretty well since that point. And D'Angelo Russell has actually started a couple of games this past week because Jordan Clarkson has been a little nicked up. So I do applaud the two young guys, because that situation could have gotten real ugly. We've seen that situation get ugly in a lot of other different locker rooms. So I applaud those two young guys.
I tend to agree with you. The one thing I'll say about that situation is, I was asked if I could see any circumstance whatsoever where Byron would be let go this season. And I know a lot of people were upset because I said, no, not really. But then I said, hold on, with this, quick amendment, the only way that I could see him, them deciding or being forced into a position where they had to make a decision there is if he completely lost the locker room. I'm not talking about, a Nick Young or a guy here and there griping, but you know what I mean, with just completely losing, especially that, that young core. So I say that only to say, although I commend them for taking care of their business and handling it very well, I do think it's somewhat of a slippery slope when you've got a team that's 3-21, when you've got a bunch of young guys trying to figure out how to, how to figure it out. You know what I mean? When you've got guys trying to, find their ways in this league, I just don't necessarily know if it's the best of ideas to start jerking them around, without any sort of explanation, without any sort of, and I jokingly said, man up and man's game earlier, but really look, folks, at this time and point, at this stage in where we are with this current NBA, that simply doesn't work. So hopefully over the course of the season they'll continue to everything will continue to work itself out. The young guys will continue to to just kind of put their head down and earn their playing time out there, quote unquote, man up, do whatever they have to do, and we don't have any blow-ups. But again, I know I kind of went long with this, but I think the only way that you lose, did you really lose out in this season is if you start to get more and more rumblings from those guys, and then putting the organization in the situation where they kind of have to make a decision. So hopefully it doesn't come to that. Jordan, what is your final shot?
We're in the middle of December. We're about 2 months away from the trade deadline. We'll this time in February, we're going to be talking about possible movements. There are a lot of people out there, Laker fans. Jabari, you mentioned it earlier. When you have back-to-back-to-back horrible seasons, it's just a new world. And so many are just not familiar with this type of territory that the Lakers are walking through. Now, with that being said, I'm telling you, if you think that there's going to be some major move come February, you are sorely mistaken. I would be completely 110% stunned if the Lakers do anything blockbuster-ish at the trade deadline. And I will tell you why. I think James mentioned this a little while ago as well. We are in what they call quiet tank mode. Okay, it is so important for this franchise to keep that top three pick that I just don't see any way, shape, or form that this organization improves the current roster, not necessarily asset-wise moving forward, but improves the current roster within the next 2 months. Doesn't make sense to do it. Does you no good to do it. The future right now lies within the lottery balls that will come bouncing when we get into April and May, whenever we have the draft lottery. That's where the future of this franchise is heading. They got to make sure that they secure the top three pick. So, trade deadline is right around the corner. You're going to hear a lot of rumors. You're going to hear a lot of possibilities. I know we've talked about some things that we would like to see done. Look, it doesn't make sense to improve this roster at this point in time. Now, in the offseason, maybe so. But for the immediate improvement, don't expect anything in the next 2 months because it's just not going to happen.
Honestly, you make a great point, and I'm glad that you brought that up. You're right. Not only do you have the trade deadline in February coming up, but you also have that December 15th date coming up here where you can actually start to look to move certain players that were that were signed in the offseason. Now, I will say this. I do expect the Lakers to look to move some of those veteran guys that they brought in, but kind of to your point, for assets. It doesn't necessarily have to be some, for a player or for a combination of players that's going to, put you into a place where you're going to win 25 games and potentially drop yourself out of the running for your pick. But in terms of getting additional picks in that first round, future considerations, I definitely could see this team doing that. All right, absolutely fantastic show today, guys. I really do appreciate everybody, taking the time. We definitely want to thank, once again, James Hollis of bballbreakdown.com. Again, he's the host of the Instant Offense podcast. We definitely appreciate Serena Winters taking the time to join us for the first time this season. Definitely not going to be the last time. We appreciate, all of that excellent analysis that she provided, in particular, some of the behind-the-scenes stuff. Her Kobe story, we all certainly appreciate that. But I also want to thank each of these guys, James and Wilson, Jordan, Russ, Greeny. Fantastic stuff from you guys today. So for each of those fine individuals, I am Jabari Davis, and this has been your Lakers Nation podcast once again. We appreciate you tuning in, and we hope to have you again next week.